asked me to be part of it. I loved it, and I was psyched, and I was happy, and I was honored, and I want to thank you for letting me come down. You know, what I feel in this room tonight, I didn't feel it for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be honest with you. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, not getting it, not understanding it. You know, for a long time, you guys, alcoholics, know what it was for me in the beginning? Alcoholics Anonymous was the meeting I didn't want to attend, the group I didn't want to join, the book I didn't want to read, the sponsor I didn't want to get, and the steps I didn't want to take. That was me in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. Fighting you guys every step of the way. I thought, know what I thought? I thought you guys were going, you know what you're going to teach me? I thought, this is what you were saying. This is what I heard. You guys are going to show me how to suffer in sobriety one day at a time. Don't look at it like a lifetime of suffering, Dave. Just suffer one day at a time. You can do that, can't you? No? You know, just once. You know, that's all. You guys are going to teach me how to suffer in sobriety. And that's what I thought all was about. Every time I came here, it was because some force in my life had me. I didn't want to be here. You know, and my sobriety result suffered as a result of that. I was miserable in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. Today I know differently. Thanks to God-inspired sponsorship, a sponsor who came into my life, God-inspired, centered, God-driven, God-inspired, God-conscious through the 12 steps. This guy showed me what it was all about. And he told me. And now I understand what it is. I know today, Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, is really nothing but the showing up business. Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing but the making it available. It's really nothing but the message delivery business. That's all we're doing here. We have a message to deliver. That's what God writes it. We deliver it. My sponsor, we're nothing but paper boys and paper girls for God. That's all. Paper mister? Huh. Paper lady? That's all we're doing. Just showing up and delivering. And my sponsor knew me. He said, Dave, I know what you're about. Hear me now and understand exactly what I'm about to tell you, Dave. We're not in the results business. We're not in the outcome business. We're not in the results business. You're not in the keeping score business, Dave. Put the scorecard down. You know, you don't get them sober. You don't get them drunk. You're not that powerful. Your job, Dave, is to simply show up and try to carry a message. That's all we're asked to do. Look at that 12 step. Having had a spiritual awakening is the, it's the result is what will happen when we take these actions. That is what will happen when we take these actions. Having had a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. This is nothing about being successful. You know, the success of my sobriety depended on the success of the guys I sponsored back in Boston. Oh my God, I'd be drunk tonight. You know? Wouldn't be happening. You know, I'm telling you right now. A guy back in Boston, I remember about 10 years ago, he drove that point home to me. It came really, the language of the heart. This guy took a podium 10 years ago back in Boston. I'll never forget. It was on a Saturday afternoon. I'll tell you exactly what he said. This guy takes a podium and he goes, I've been sober 20 years, he said. And in my 20 years of sobriety, I've sponsored over 200 men. He said, 200 men with 100% success rate. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, all my guys are drinking. I said, how are you doing that? You know? He says, no, don't get me wrong. A lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years, and I call that 100% success. He showed up. And he just kept trying, you know. My sobriety date, you guys, is November 15, 2001. I'm just about as sober as your group been here as long. It's from November 15, 2001. What, 13 years and 3 weeks and a couple days ago, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say I came back, I've been here before. November 15, 2001 is not my first sobriety date. I was collecting them for years prior to that. Reset, you know. Oh, my God. Prior to November 15, 2001, I'll be in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. Chronic relapsing. Couldn't understand what you guys had. More often than not, didn't want what you guys had. I'm here because some force in my life has me here. At first it was my job. Then, of course, it was my family. Then, of course, the courts are now in my life because I'm getting in trouble out there. So I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm running here basically for cover. I don't want what you guys have. I'm coming on a nightly basis. I'm looking at what you guys are all about. I'm saying, my God, you guys aren't drinking on purpose. I'm like, whoa, what's that about? You know, it's not fitting with me at all, you know. I'm saying, my God, I'm looking around on a nightly basis and going, my God, please tell me there's more to my life than this. If all I have to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs, hiding out in church basements the rest of my life, oh, shoot me now. I'm not going to make it. And I didn't make it. I was a meeting maker who didn't make it. I came to meetings. I was a meeting maker. Every stretch of sobriety I had, whether I stayed sober a week, whether it was a month, whether it was a year, at one point during those 12 years, I stayed sober 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, taking no action. 3 years I stayed sober, taking no action. I thought the action you guys were talking about was coming to your meetings. Isn't that enough? My God, what else do I need to do? You know, I just taking no action. I stayed sober 3 months. I mean, 3 years, the longest stretch of sobriety. And every stretch of sobriety I had was all marked by the same commonality, you guys. I was miserable. I wouldn't tell you that then. If you asked me how I was doing, it'd be super great, fine, thanks, you know. I'm bluffing my way right past that. I need to tell you what the truth of the matter was. I was miserable here. I was suffering in sobriety. Untreated alcoholism is what it was called. Untreated sobriety. Bad case of sobriety going on. Every time I was here, bad sobriety happened in my life. You know, and I know how to quit drinking. Hear me, you guys. Quitting is not my issue. I know how to quit. My God, I've done that 1,000 times. I get that down. I know how to quit. Can you guys show me how to stay quit? Can you show me how to not start again? Or better yet, can you show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? That's my problem, you guys. You see, I can get sober, and I can grab my coffee, and I can take my seat night after night after night after night. But until and unless I get comfortable with you guys, I'm not staying. I can't stay. I need relief. I need it. I know how I get. I need relief. And if I'm not finding it here in the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous by taking the action just showing me how to take, if I'm not doing that, I'm going to find relief out there, and it's going to be waiting for me in a bottle and all sorts of other things. And so out I go every time, chasing it, running. You know, and during those 12 years, my God, in and out, I'll burn my life to the ground twice over. I will destroy everything good in my path. And I'm coming on, I'm hearing you guys talk to me, and it's not like you're lying. You're talking about your new freedom, your new happiness. You're promising me a new freedom. Every night, you're promising me a new. I wasn't getting any of that. You guys told me I was going to be amazed before I was halfway through. I'm like, halfway through what? Lunch? My day? What were you talking about? I wasn't getting that. I know why today. I thought if I sat next to the happy, shiny people here, I'd get what they got. It doesn't work that way. Look, I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. You know? I'm not going to find my recovery watching the guy next to me take action. Like I did for so long in here. Watching you guys. Watching it work for you when it ain't working for me. And I'm getting pissed and resentful and angry. It's working for you and it ain't working for me. I'm the one losing. I'm the one suffering. I'm the one miserable. And off I finally went. I just couldn't take it anymore. You know? But here I stand tonight. 13 years, 3 weeks, and a couple days away from my last drink. And I'm here to report to you guys the truth tonight. I didn't fly all the way down here from Boston to lie to you. Jump on the plane tomorrow. Yep, got over on Tampa last night. Yeah, we did. Yeah, I fooled you guys. No, I'm here to report the truth. And the truth of the matter is this, you guys. For the better part of these last 13 years, 3 weeks, and a couple days, I've been happily, joyfully sober in Alcoholics Anonymous this time. Happy and sober in the same sentence. Before it was one or the other. Make up your mind. If you're happy or sober, how you're both, I'll never know. You know, this time it's happening for me. This time around, I can report to you guys that I've been set free. Free from the obsession of drink, free from the obsession of drug, free from the... Set free. How is that possible? What is it that this time around marks it so different? How can I report to you what's been going on for these last 13 years, 3 weeks, and a couple of days is so different than those 12 years in and out, burning my life to the ground twice over? What marks the difference? One word. Every time I speak, one word and one word only. Sponsorship. That's it. It comes down to one thing for me, sponsorship. This time around, I got a sponsor. God-inspired, God-centered, God-directed, God-conscious, God-driven through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who wasn't afraid to tell me the truth from the first time we sat down. A guy who looked me in the eye and said, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you feel. Your thoughts and your feelings, Dave, to be quite honest, are really not my concern. If what I say and what we do along the way makes you a little uncomfortable, he says, so be it. He says, so be it. He says, I'd rather step on your toes before I stand in your grave. I'm going to tell you the truth. You've been lying all your life and people have been lying back. It's about time you heard the truth. He said, the truth of the matter is this. You think you got a drinking problem, Dave, huh? Is that what you think? You think you got a little problem with cocaine? Is that the problem going out there? Problem with the boss, the judge, your family? Problem? No, those aren't your problems. You have no such problems. You got one problem, and I'll tell you what it is. You got one problem and one problem only. And what is it, Dave? You're selfish and you're self-centered to the core. And until and unless you look at that, take action and examine it, you're not going to recover. You're just not. Understand what I'm saying here, right now, right now, Dave. You're not going to recover. You want me to sponsor you? I'll sponsor you. And here's my job as your sponsor. You know what I'm going to do, he said? One thing and one thing only. I'm going to take you by the hand. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to ask you to trust me. And I'm going to walk you down a path, he said. It's a pathway to power. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your hand and put your hand here into a power greater than yourself. And then I'm going to step aside. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you how to run your life. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you which means to go to, not to go to, where to sit, not to sit, who to date, not to date. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you, have them call you every night. As a matter of fact, Dave, I'd really rather you don't. You know what I mean? He said to me, I'm going to get you to God. And I'm going to get you to God quick. Because your only problem is really one thing, Dave. Page 44, lack of power. That's our only trouble here. We got a lack of power. You got a lack of power going on, Dave. And I'm going to help you find. I'm going to get you to God. And so began the journey. And so began the journey that changed my life when I finally sat down and listened to a guy who had some experience. And you know what he did? He took this book and he turned to page 44, you guys, and he pointed out a line to me that I read 1,000 times and never once saw. I read it over. I never saw it. Page 44 says, "We suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer." Guess I got to get me one of them. I got to get me a spiritual. No idea what, how, when, where, but I got to find me one of them. And the thing about an illness, how is my drinking an illness? Seriously, how is it? I'm just a guy who likes to get drunk every night. I work hard, I play hard, rah, rah, rah. Why is the whole world out there? I'm just having fun. How is it possibly an illness? And if it is an illness, oh, can I get a pill, please? If there's a spirituality pill out there, trust me, I'd take one. No, I take two. If one is good, two is great. Can I get 10, please? Let me get through the week here. You know what I mean? By the end of the month, I'll be shooting my spirituality pill. Oh, yeah, it's going to go in. Get it in, you know, get it in, you know? Oh, how about this, you guys? How about this? If this is an illness, check me in the hospital, cut this thing called alcoholism out of me, and let me go home. Let's call it a day. Let's just wrap this thing up. You know, 8 years ago, I had my gallbladder out. My gallbladder was removed. Haven't thought about it since, you know. I don't go to meetings with Gallbladders Anonymous. Hang out with the gallbladder sufferers. They took it, it's gone, it's done. That's the kind of illness I'm looking for. That's what I want here. No. Not if you're the hole in the soul alcoholic. Not if you're the real alcoholic. Not if you're the hopeless variety alcoholic that big book talks about. I mean, who wants the kind of illness that requires we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God? Is it a solution? Who wants the kind of illness that requires we do searching and fearless moral inventories? Is it a solution? Or make amends and restitution to everyone we've harmed over the course of our entire lives? Is it a solution? Would God forbid lay our lives down for our brothers and sisters sick and suffering on a daily basis? Not me. I didn't want it. Show me an easier, softer way. There's got to be one out there. Show me an easiest. 12 years I looked for an easier, softer way. Searched for an easier, softer way. Looked this way inside and out. Show me an easy. Couldn't find one. 100 men and women, they thought they could find an easier, softer way. The ones who wrote this book, they couldn't find one either. Why? Because this is the easiest, softer way. This is right here, the easiest, softer way. But I didn't know that then. Something else he points out on the same page, a little further down, he says, Dave, you're the hole in the soul alcoholic, the real alcoholic, the hopeless variety alcoholic. You only got two choices. Just two. It's like you're at a game show, Dave. Hey, behind door number one, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number two, you're doomed to an alcoholic death. I'm like, can I phone a friend out there? Someone help me with this one, please. I'm in trouble with this decision, you know. I couldn't decide. 12 years I wrestled with that decision. You know, my sponsor pointed out, Dave, you only got those two choices. That's it. You know, thank God for this guy and pointing these things out to me. So what was it like when I first got to you guys? Exactly what was my life looking like when I first walked into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time? I'll let you know what it was like. It was like this. I'm 29 years old. It's 1989. I'm 29 years old. On the outside, it looks pretty good. I'm working for a pretty prestigious law firm outside of Boston, just north of town. About 3 or 4 years into my career, I'm going to slide this off. It's going to be hot. About 3 or 4 years into my career, and I'm right here in this chair. You know? Thank you. And on the outside, like I say, it looks pretty good. And if you meet me at a bar, I'm going to tell you all about that within 2 or 3 minutes. You'll hear all about this. You know? I'll point out my $50,000 sports car parked right outside that window, strategically parked so we can see it from both the bar and the pool table. You know what I mean? We'll go back to my three-story, four-bedroom brick townhouse outside of Boston. I'll be wearing $800 suits, and I'll be bragging about all my glorious courtroom victories. You know? And what you'd also have seen, guys, had I known it existed. What you also would have seen if I taught you in that barroom that night. You also would have seen a hole in the soul this wide. With all the drink and all the cocaine. All the shiny sports cars, beautiful townhouses, and the most lovely suits in the world just couldn't seem to fill. I couldn't fill it. And when I was 29 years old, 4 years into my career, my bosses looked at me and said, David, either you get sober or you get out. And they called me a disgrace to my law firm. And I argue with them on that. I took issue with that, you know. Tell you guys, a little hindsight and clarity and help from you guys, I can stand here and tell you they were right. I was a disgrace to my law firm. I was a disgrace to my profession. I was a disgrace to my family. And I was a disgrace to myself. You know, the kicker, though, when looking back at the whole thing is, I didn't mean to be. I didn't want to be. It just kept happening. And I couldn't stop it. And the one thing in the world that seemed to give me any kind of relief was also the one thing in the world that kept destroying everything good in my path. And I didn't know how to turn it off. And at 29 years old, when they said, either you get sober, you get out, I said, okay, and I jumped on a plane. I flew out of Boston to a place called Ephrata, Pennsylvania, and I started this journey at a 28-day rehab. And you heard our friend tonight read the preamble. If the only requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing. Except I didn't have one of them. I had three bosses who had desire I stop drinking. You know what I mean? Maybe they should have gone. I don't know. But this wasn't going to work for me. This wasn't going to work for me from the start as a result, you know? But so began the journey. And I look back at those 12 years in and out, in and out, in and out. I got to ask myself, what do I got to do different this time around? Maybe change it up a little bit to get a different result, you know? What were some of the mistakes, so to speak, that I might have made back then? And here's one of them. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I walked into these rooms looking around saying, my God, I'm smarter than all you people combined. Don't need your help, don't need your guidance, don't need your suggestions, don't need your directions, do not need your 12 steps. Your big book was a little too big, thanks. Oh, I wasn't picking it up. I thought it was a novel. Light reading for the alcoholic. No idea what you were doing with it, didn't care. I wasn't picking it up. You know, I was convinced I can do this thing on my own. That's basically what I said to myself. Thank God I finally figured out there's nothing to figure out. Thank God I finally figured out we don't do this alone. You guys promised me I never had to be alone again. We don't do this alone. But I didn't know that then. You know, and I had a guy pull me aside outside of Boston one night, and a Friday night, I can still remember like it was yesterday. Guy pulled me aside. He says, Dave, you know, I got to be honest with you, man. He says, I never met anyone too dumb for this program, but my God, we bury buttheads like you all the time. Too smart for your own good. We'll let one of us show you. You know nothing about what's going on in here. You know nothing about alcoholism. You know nothing about our suggested program of recovery. You don't even know what these 12 steps are about. You have no idea what that book's about. You don't even know what an alcoholic is, he says, but you got this on your own. You're all set, huh? You know? You're killing yourself. You're in and out of here every other day drunk, and you're wondering why it's not working. You're running around here full of resentment and fear, and you're not letting one of us show you what to do. If that's the way you want to handle it, good luck to you. You know, I'll never forget the conversation. I walked away laughing. Like, who is he? Guy was trying to save my life. Second mistake I made, guys, back in then, I'll tell you exactly what it was. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. And for the sake of this conversation, I am talking about the drink, the drug, and all the things like it. They're on my table. But it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's keep it simple. I'm going to talk about the drink. I got a drinking problem. Everyone in my world is telling me I got a drinking problem. My mom and dad are telling me I got a drinking problem. My brother and sister are telling me I got a drinking problem. The best friends in my life, who today, sadly, are no longer in my life, were telling me I got a drinking problem. My bosses, my coworkers, everyone in my world is telling me I got a drinking problem. So I know what I said to myself? Okay, fine. I said, okay, if I got a drinking problem, know what I'm going to do? I'm taking the drink out of the equation. Problem solved. That's what I'll do. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. That should do the trick. Problem with that, I wasn't a problem drinker. I was an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. It set me free. It gave me relief. There was magic in that bottle, you guys. You know what I'm talking about. And I didn't cross some magical line years into my drinking and figure this out. This is the way it went from the first night out there, out of the gates. Can I take back to October 73 for 1 minute? 13 years old in a little patch of woods in Reading, Massachusetts before a junior high school dance with six friends getting drunk for the first time. My God, what a monumental night in my life that one singular night was. My God, I'm still talking about it. October 1973, I'm still talking about it. Remember, like it was yesterday, I know exactly who I was with, I know exactly where I was, I know exactly what I drank, I know exactly what happened. My God, that night my world changed forever. You know, I had all the fears, doubts, insecurities, all the pains, pressures, and problems any 13-year-old kid might have had. I might have had a couple extra. I was the goofiest looking kid you ever saw. You know, triple lens glasses, big nose, buck teeth, 6'1" by the age of 7. You know what I mean? Every class had one. It was me, you know. But give me 15 minutes in the woods that night. 15 minutes with that bottle in my hand, and my God, my world changed. I'm not saying the glasses, they didn't fall off. The nose didn't straighten. The teeth, you know, they didn't drop an inch or two. You know what happened as best I can describe it? The fear went away. I liked myself better when I was drinking. I liked the world. I liked you guys better when I'm drinking. I liked the world around me better. I liked myself better when I was drinking. And I figured it out that night. And I also figured out something else that night. I made a decision that night. I didn't even know I was making it. I made a decision that night to make that drink the most important thing in my life. I made it. I know I did. The drink and drug and all the things to follow. I made that decision that night. I'm going to make this the most important thing in my life. And to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. The prices. My chair, that seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, that didn't come free. There's huge and heavy price tags hanging from that thing. Heartache, misery, loss, frustration, careers, jobs, friendships, tears in my family's eyes. My God, ultimately my freedom, that's on the price tag. It's hanging there too. The prices we pay. You know, how can I best describe, how about this? I'll tell you exactly how I can best describe it to you. I'm 21 years old. I walk into a liquor store downtown Boston. I'm on Boylston Street. I walk into the back. I grab a 12-pack out of the cooler. Walk back up to the front of the counter. Pop the 12-pack in front of the guy at the counter. He looks at me. I look at him. He goes, that'll cost you $14.95. In every real friendship you've ever had. I paid it. I was 31 when I walked into a bar. I said, like a shot in the beer, please. Bartender looks at me. I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $8, mister. In your marriage. I remember like it was yesterday, you guys. I was 41 years old. I walked into a liquor store on Tremont Street in Boston. I walked up to the front counter. I pointed to the top shelf and said, I'd like that fifth of tequila, please, the mezcal. Yes, that's the one I want. The guy grabs the bottle, pops it down in front of me. I look at him. He looks at me. He says, that'll cost you $17.95. And you're licensed to practice law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I paid it. Sounds about right. Come on, man. I mean, what was in that bottle meant more to me than my career. I needed it. What was in that bottle meant more to me than my family, meant more to me than my friendships, meant more to me than my material, meant more to me than any, like I say, ultimately meant more to me than my freedom. Meant more to me, the prices we pay. What did Just Eat cost you? What price did you pay? Any freebies? Anyone get here free? Anyone roll a crest of a winning streak, come to AA? You just don't see it, you know? I never see a hand on that question. What's up with that, you know? The prices we pay, you get it, I get it, we know what we're talking about. Anyway, so what did I go through? I get through high school, get through college. Nothing but a four-year blackout for me. Wish I could tell you more. My friends said we had fun. That's cool. That's all I need to know. I graduate 4 years later with a degree in economics in a cocaine addiction. And off to law school I go. Da-da-da, busy, busy, busy. Things to do, you know what I mean? Gotta go. I do law school in 3 years. I passed the bar the first time out. Now I'm out there working. Now I'm 26, 27, 28, 29 years old, 3, 4, 5 years into my career, and here's where it's all falling apart. During my school years, when in college and law school, I stayed a step ahead or two with a drink. Not great, but not bad either. You know, I got the job done. But by the age of 26, 27, 28 years old into my career now the drink's catching up. Matter of fact, the drink's winning. I'm no longer making choices here. I'm no longer in control. I'm 29 years old and I'm a man who has lost the ability to control his drinking. It's over. It's done. It's gone. I'm 29 years old and I live in a body that cannot take a drink safely and don't even know it as I pour a fifth of whatever down my throat every night. I'm 29 years old and I'm suffering from an allergy to alcohol that I don't even know exists inside this body. I'm 29 years old and I'm out of control. And that's when my bosses pulled me aside and said, David, either you get sober or you get out. And simply and so to save that job, like I said, I jumped on a plane, flew out to Pennsylvania, and went to that 28-day rehab. And I know there was a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women put in front of me at that place. I spent 28 days with them, and I didn't hear a thing. Because we get a principle in here, you guys. The principle is real simple. It says you can't say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You just can't say the right thing. You could have Dr. Bob to my left, Bill Wilson to my right, and Lois pouring coffee out in Pennsylvania that month, and I wouldn't have heard a thing. Thanks for the coffee, Lo, you know. You know, I wasn't getting it. 28 days later, 15 pounds heavier, I'm back in Boston. What am I doing in Boston? Oh, recovery, I'm in recovery, shouting it from the hills like I know what it is. I'm not in recovery, trust me, I'm lying. You're saying it, so I'm saying it. That was my recovery plan. You know, that's my program, repeat what you say, that's how it works. I'm talking to you in bumper stickers, really. Hey, Dave, want to go for coffee? Whoa, easy does it, I don't know. Stock raving out of my mind, you know what I mean? Just bouncing around, in and out of here like a rat on crack, just out of in and out of your doors, and not really following your program very well and not really staying sober very much and suffering all along the way. And I might stay sober a week, a month, a year, 1.3 years. During those 12 years when I was in and out, in and out, in and out, you guys, I stayed sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3 years, taking no action. No action, no sponsor, no book, no steps, nothing. No God. You know, and I tell you that story because I think it's important. And I'll tell you why. Let me fast forward for 1 minute. Let me take you to November 2001, my sobriety this time around. I am 2 weeks sober. I'm landing at a place called Miller House on Cape Cod in Falmouth, Massachusetts. I just arrived there that night. I'm exactly 15 days sober. I know the date, November 30th, 2001. I'm 15 days sober. I land at this place. I'm out back having a smoke. And one of those guys named Count Joe, he's a counselor's aide at that place, still works there to this day. He came out back to have a smoke with with me, introduced himself, and we started talking. And if Joe was standing here right now, and I said, hey, Joe, remember what you said to me that day, and unlikely Joe's probably going to tell you he doesn't remember what he said. 13 years later, guys, I'm still talking about it. Talk about God using us with or without our permission, willing or unwilling, a conscious or unconscious instrument of a power greater than himself. That's exactly what this guy was. Here's what he said to me. He says, you know, Dave, if all you're doing here in Alcoholics Anonymous this time around, buddy, is just looking for one more day of sobriety, and you think that's all we have to offer, just one more day of sobriety, that's all you got to get out of this deal? He says, and you're taking no action, Dave, no action whatsoever to change the man that you brought in. You're doing nothing to change the person that you brought in. He goes, my God, Dave, isn't it just a matter of time? Isn't it just a matter of time? He says, David, how long can you hold your breath? How long can you hold your breath before you're going to pick a drink back up again? And the guy was right. How, like 3 years. I can hold my breath in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3 years before I'm going to need to pick up a drink to find relief. I can hold my breath 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anyone in this room who's relapsed, I don't care if you stayed sober a week, a month, a year, or a decade, you did the same thing I did after my 3 years. You did what I did after your month, your week, your year, or your decade. You did the same thing. What do? We made a sober decision. I made a sober decision that night to pick that drink. Holding that drink in my hand that night, 3 years ago, when drinking was not my problem. I did not have a drinking problem that night. Couldn't have. Hadn't touched one in 3 years. How was the drink my problem that night? It was not my problem. You know what my problem was that night? I'll tell you exactly what it was. My problem that night, my sobriety. My ugly, miserable, untreated, I can't stand it for another second sobriety, and my inability to live comfortably in it. I was solving the wrong problem. Again, I'll tell you what, you know, you want the leading cause of relapse? You know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. Sobriety. Bad case sobriety going on. You know, yeah, it is. Oh, give me a drink. I need a drink. Gotta get out of here. You know? And powerless, my God, you guys, I was only going out for the weekend. I said that to someone back Monday. Same as he. You know? Like I have any control over this thing. You know? And that drink, that weekend, only going out for the weekend, that weekend lasted 9 years. And during those 9 years, I will burn my life to the ground twice over, destroying everything good in my path. You know what it looks like? You know what those 9 years looks like? Real simple. I'll drink till I can stand that no more. Then I'll come here and get sober till I can stand this no more. Then I'll get drunk. Then I'll get sober. Then I'll get drunk. Then I'll get sober. Before you know it, there goes another decade of my life. There goes another decade of my life wasted and left in my past, a wake of destruction a mile wide because I blow like a tornado through the lives of everyone who loves me. And wake up maybe yet again, maybe if I'm lucky, in another nut house. Wondering what happened. Where'd everybody go? I'm all by myself again. And everything's gone. And I got to build something out of nothing again. All by myself. And I'm getting tired. And I'm getting lost. I'm getting desperate. And I don't know what to do. And that's what kept happening. Over and over and again. You know, this book gives us real clear-cut directions, doesn't it, huh? Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. For me, in the end, it's November 2001. I'm a walking shell of the man I used to be. I'm unemployed and unemployable again. This time, my partners at the law firm, not my bosses, my partners throw me out. Six-figure income gone overnight. I'm trying to put a law practice together by day all by myself while I'm walking the streets of Boston at night doing whatever came next to get a drink. My friends are gone. They don't want anything to do with me anymore. They're long gone at this point. Tears in my parents' eyes on a nightly basis put there by my actions, and I'm powerless over stopping. You guys, my mom and dad are not alcoholic, but they suffered from alcoholism. Mine. My brothers and sisters, wonderful people, at this point in my life, they're afraid of me. They don't want me in their houses. I can't see my nieces and nephews. How does that happen? My younger sister, close to in the world, looks at me about a month before I got sober and says, David, I don't even know who you are anymore. You know? Every bit of potential, ambition, and drive I once had are long gone. I can't even get out of bed unless there's a bottle or a pipe waiting for me. I can't move. Honor and dignity are lost in the dust of my addiction. My morals and values are warped beyond any sense of recognition. I don't even know who I am. My bottle's empty. My wallet's empty. My life's empty. I'm living, one might say, to drink. It's all I was doing. I was living, one might say, to drink. And when I live like that, I got to drink like that. And when I drink like that, I got to live like that. And it's only heading in one direction. Down. My last night out there was Wednesday night, November 14, 2001, a night like any other for me. I copped an eight ball, I smoked it, I banged back a fifth of tequila so I could forget about you and the rest of the world. I ended up closing some dive bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts, like I closed every bar I've ever been in. Lights are flashing. Dave, you gotta go. You got 2 o'clock, you gotta go. I looked at her that night, I grabbed my drink off that bar, I kicked that thing back, I emptied that glass, I put that empty glass down that bar, having no idea that that would be my last drink to date. No idea. I believe from the moment that empty glass hit the bar, from that moment to this, I've been living a plan not my own. I believe, trust me, had I known that was going to be my last drink, guys, I would have ordered two. One for the road, you know. I didn't know. I had no idea, you know. I believe from that moment to this, from that very moment that glass hit the bar to this, I've been living a plan not my own. I didn't chart the course of these last 13 years, design the destiny, or plot the path. Some power in my life far greater than me jumped on in, has taken over. I went home that night, I passed out, ready to get up and just do it all over again the next day because it's all I had going, it's all I knew. That was my plan. But apparently God had another, because that'll be a little bit of what it was like. Here's what happened. On the morning of Thursday, November 15, 2001, my sobriety date, I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to a knock on the door, unlike any other knock I've ever heard in my entire life, and on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, two state and two local, looking for me. And my run was over. The end of a long, sad, heart-wrenching, and oftentimes quite despicable run was over. What happened that morning was I was one of 38 guys arrested from Miami to Boston. One of 38 from Miami to Boston. I was 17 of us were in Boston. I was one of the 17. And next thing you know, I'm standing in front of a United States Federal District Court judge. Downtown Boston. And the judge is looking at us and says, the charges, check it out. The charges, conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. Kilograms. I buy eight balls. You got the wrong guy. I should have been so lucky out there. Can I see one? Can I hold one just for a second? Seriously, I want to say this is a big mistake. I get eight Colombians to my left, eight Colombians to my right, and there's Dave Perry in the middle. Like, what happened here? This is just a mess. This is not fair. This is all wrong, you know? And the judge is telling us, you guys, the judge is telling us the charges carry 10 to life, if convicted. And the judge is telling us none of us are getting bail. We're not leaving. It's not an issue of how much. We're not getting it. And I can't make a telephone call for the next 24 hours. And if you were standing next to me that day, shackled at my ankles, waist, and wrists to 16 strangers, looking at my dad in the back row of the courtroom, devastated as he sat there wondering what he did wrong with his son, I would have told you it's the worst day of my life. Undisputed, bar none, I would have called that the worst day of my life that morning. But I'm here tonight in Tampa to let you know I don't quite see it that way anymore. I took a little plane ride down here to let you guys, I don't see it that way. I'm here to report to you guys that I probably look at that event, I do look at that event as the single greatest event that's ever happened in my life, bar none. And I'm also here to report to you that I believe with every cell in my body, God sent those men. I don't know what got you in your seats tonight. I'm sure it's more than just a little dinner, you know. Whatever got you in these seats, I bet you if you look real hard at your journey through that door, that somewhere in your journey, you're going to see the hand of God as well. And if you can't find him there, well, check out one of us. We'll help you find him. He's there. You know? I'll tell you, I know when the worst day of my life was. I'll tell you exactly when it was. 2 days later, Saturday, November 17, 2001, 50 years to the day my mom and dad were married and 50 years to the day we're celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Now, the fact that I'm not at this wedding anniversary does not make this the worst day of my life. I miss family events along the way. This is nothing new, you know. The reason why I'm calling it the worst day of my life is this. I'm in a place called Plymouth County Correctional Facility in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm in a room about twice the size of this one, 80 bunk beds spread across the place, new men, they put us there before they bring us to ourselves. I'm sitting on my bunk with 79 strangers frolicking around me, you know, and what I'm doing, yeah, that's what they were doing, is I'm sitting there devastated, staring at the wall, and what I'm looking at, you guys, I'm staring at the wall, and what I'm seeing on the wall is the payphone, and I'm realizing for the first time in my life, if I want to get up, walk across that room, and pick up that receiver, I got no one left. I could not think of the name of one single solitary person left in my world that wants to hear my voice on the other end of that phone and have anything to say back. How microscopically small my world had become, and realized it right then. And that's my bottom. That's it. I found mine. I won't let it dip any deeper, drop any lower, slide any further. That's it. I got it. I hit it. I got it. I was in Baltimore a bunch of years back when I heard a woman talking to 500 of us, easily 500 in the room. She was talking to me when she said this, though. You know what she said? She said, hey, have you found that place in your life where you've got no place left to go but to God? Are you there yet? Have you realized that there's no human power on earth that's going to relieve us of our alcoholism? There's none. There's no human power out there that will do it. And our job is one thing and one thing only here, guys. We need to find a power. Find a power by which we can live, and it's got to be one bigger than us, period. That's what this whole thing's about. You know? And I don't know what my prayer was in that jail cell. That jail, looking at that. I don't know what it was. You know what my prayer was? What's God? What's wrong with me? That's a prayer. Huh? But it got answered. 5 days later, I got pulled out of that cell and back before that judge. I'm here but for the grace of God and the compassion of the federal government. They gave me a chance to find my recovery if I wanted it. Needing it meant nothing. If I wanted it, I could have it. And they put me in their federal pretrial services division and gave me a chance to get some recovery. The charges weren't going away. They made that clear. But in the meantime, I can get some better. So I spent the next 10 days in a detox, 4.5 months at that Miller place, the Miller house down in Falmouth, off to a halfway house in Boston, 2 blocks from the courthouse I used to practice in. Oh, God. And onto a sober house. And for the first 8 months of my sobriety, just like those 12 years I was telling you guys before, nothing changed. Miserable in sobriety, suffering in sobriety, bad case sobriety. The only thing keeping me sober during those first 8 months, one thing and one thing only, fear. You see, if I pick a drink back up, the federal marshal's picking me up, and I'm going back to Plymouth. I'm not doing that. So I'm afraid. I can't drink. But that's not our solution here. It's a temporary fix, but not our solution. Yet God had yet another miracle in store for me. On July 21st, 2002, 8 months sober, God brought a man back in my life who became my sponsor. He was an old friend of mine from Boston. He was sober those years I was going in and out. He stayed sober. 1997, 8 years stock raving sober. He got sick in Boston, had to move out of Boston and go back to Baltimore to be with his family. He needed help, my friend Steve. At a meeting outside of Baltimore on a Monday night in a town called Elkton, Maryland, he heard a guy take a podium, the late, great Tom Flynn, a giant in Alcoholics Anonymous. We lost him 2 years ago. Tom took the podium that night, and my friend Steve heard him carry a message of hope and a message of love and a message of recovery he never heard before. He went up to Tom after that meeting and said, Tom, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been around 8 years. I have no one talked like you're talking. Will you show me what you're doing? And that's the night my friend Steve turned his sobriety into recovery and started walking down this path. I did not know this was going on. I'm back in Boston with a crack pipe and a bottle in my hand, paying no attention to Steve down in Baltimore. But he was paying attention to me, calling my sisters, making sure I wasn't ending up dead. And when he heard about the arrest, the fact that I was back in treatment, he called me, and here's what he said. It's July 2002. I'm 8 months sober. Dave, my sister's got a place up at Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. I'm flying into Boston. I got 3 days off from work. I'm going to go up and visit her for a couple days. You want to go? Seconds and inches how our lives can turn, guys, huh? Seconds and inches. What if I said no, didn't feel like it, didn't have the time? I guarantee you, had that been the case, I would not be standing here with you tonight. I thought it was a 3-day vacation with an old friend. No. I had no idea God was sending me my sponsor. God inspired, God directed, God reliant, God conscious through the 12 steps. He gets in my car, I look at him, he look at me. We start talking. You guys, this guy looks different, sounds different. He's acting different. He's inexplicably different. There's something about his eyes, fresh and glowing. The guy was on fire. The exact same experience Bill Wilson describes at the end of that bleak November 1934 whenever he came to dinner is exactly what happened in that car that day. That morning, Logan Airport, Boston, when he got in my car, it was attractive. Within 15 minutes, you guys, this guy gave me the greatest gift that one alcoholic can give another. He gave me a little bit of hope. I was hopeless. I needed a little bit of hope. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get what he got. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could feel like he felt. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could sound like he sounded. And hope that maybe, just maybe, my crumbling life might come back together. You guys, he talked about this big book like the thing had a heartbeat. He talked about God like he just came from having lunch with the guy. You know what I mean? It was powerful. It was attractive. And I wanted it. I wanted what this guy had, you know? And he looked at me. He goes, you know, Dave, I got to be honest. I said, Steve, you're talking about these steps. You're talking about these steps? I go a bit around. I go, when do I start these steps? He goes, when do you want to recover? When do you want the pain to stop? When do you want to finally start letting the hurt end, Dave, huh? I go, Steve, you know, I'm only 8 months sober. Should I wait a little while? Wait. Where are you coming up with the wait? Nowhere in our history, nowhere in our literature, nowhere in our big book, nowhere in our 12 steps, nowhere in Alcoholics Anonymous does it say you need to wait. As a matter of fact, it says just the opposite, guys. If you decide you want what we have and you're willing to go to Wayne Lake to get it, you're ready. Let's go. I don't care if you're throwing up in your last drink. Wipe off your mouth if you decide you want what we have and you're willing. Let's get started. I said, Steve, though, eight months into it, come on, say, I'm not, what if I make a mistake? He goes, make a mistake? He goes, Dave, how long did you drink? I said, 27 years, Steve. He's a little late to worry about a mistake, don't you think, Dave? My God, let's get going. He goes, how long, David? How long are you going to leave a half measures of deal you nothing? You got 12 years of half measures going on and you got nowhere. How long, Dave, are you going to stand the turning point just to walk away like you've done so many times before? How long are you going to let your old ideas kill you? They're killing you. You got old ideas that are killing you. You got to let go of them. He goes, my God, Dave, how long are you going to come to a 12-step program and ignore the 12 steps? 12 years for me, guys, is my lucky number, you know what I mean? You know? I said, Steve, you know, I just told you what's going on in my life. My God, dude, you got to see what's in. I got real problems going on here. I got real life problems happening. I got federal charges hanging over my head that supposedly carry 10 to life. I'm going to get disbarred for the practice of law. I don't have a friend left in the world. My parents are in tears. My brothers and sisters aren't talking to me. I don't have a place to live. I'm living in a halfway house next to the courthouse I used to practice in. I don't have a cent left in the bank. I'm not working. My life's in a shambles. Seriously, Steve, give me something real. This guy's coming to me with prayers and inventories. You guys, I'm looking for lawyers and loans, you know what I mean? I got real stuff going on out there. Real life shit's happening to me. I need help, you know? Oh. He goes, I get it, Dave. I get it. I see. I get it. Here's what I'm going to tell you, man. I get it. You got walls up. Walls up? You got walls up? You got walls up between you and your family? Walls up between you and your friends? Walls up between you and your finances? Walls up between you and your career? Walls up between you and the law? You got walls up? Walls up everywhere. But here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to promise you, Dave, one by one by one by one by one, every one of those walls are going to come crashing down. And the most amazing part of it is you'll have nothing to do with it. Just let me show you, not tell you, let me show you how these actions come alive in your life, and you watch what happens. I'm promising you, everything will change, and one by one by one, every one of those problems that you have in your life today are going to disappear. You got to wrap this simple concept around your head, Dave, that you haven't been able to wrap around so long and so long up to now. It's simply this: I'm going to show you a way to stay about God's business and let God take care of yours. That's what this thing's all about. You got to be kidding me, Steve. Give me something I can see, something real, something I can touch. I need something real here. I'm here to tell you guys, everything that man promised me that morning, everything that man promised me would come true, has come true. And every one of those walls that were up in my life, one by one by one by one by one, come crashing down. But I said to him, I said, Steve, are you talking about these steps? You're talking about these steps? Here they are, staring me in the face every meeting I go to. Let me tell you this, Steve. I don't understand how these steps work. I don't agree they're going to work. I don't even believe they're going to work. I said, how do you do these steps if you don't understand them? How do you do these steps if you don't even believe in them? How do you do them if you don't agree they're going to work? I said, geez, to David, Davey, you don't have to understand them or agree with them or even believe them to make them work. I said, how do you do them? He says, all you have to do is simply become willing to follow a person who's already done them. That's it. He said, the greatest promise, page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Can you walk behind me down a path? He said, can you stay right behind me down, 3 feet behind me down a path, Dave? Can you do that? You're not going to say what I say. You're not going to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I got, because this is a program of action. You know, coming's not in your head, Dave. It's not in your head. It's not what you think. It's not what you hear. It's not what you read. It's not what you see. It's not what you say. It's not what you study, Dave. It's all about what you do, or in your case, what you haven't done. It's a whole bunch of actions that we take in Alcoholics Anonymous to recover from this disease, and you've yet to take any of them. Let me show you. And that's the day. That's the day I turn my ugly, miserable sobriety into recovery and started walking down this path with you. That's the day that changed my life. And I'm here to report to you guys, immediate action will get you immediate results. Immediate results. I tell you guys, by 3 that afternoon, I'm turning to page 63 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm turning to page 63 and I'm taking the third step. Offering myself to God. 5 words that changed the course of my life. We took on a new employer, page 63. Today I work for God. I got a new boss. I got a new job. And with that come new job duties. The most powerful, life-changing prayer I've ever said in my entire world is the third step prayer. This morning I got on my knees praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out like I do every morning. You know? I punched in this morning. God, I'm punching in, checking in. What's on my to-do list today? And He made it real clear. He said, get to Logan Airport, Dave. Jump on that plane. I want you to fly down to Tampa. And tonight I want you to go to the anniversary group with that group down in Tampa and tell them my message. Let them know. Share the message with them. Bring them the paper. I said, I'll do that, God. What do you want me to tell him when I get there? He said, I'll tell you when you get there. just get there. Your job, get there, you know. We'll do the rest once you get there, you know. I get back in the car right after taking that prayer. I said to my sponsor, my God, third step prayer done. Woohoo, let's get some dinner. He goes, no, let's get a notebook. Drove me to a country store, made me buy a pen and a paper. I came back out. The man stood over me while I wrote a fourth step. 3 hours later, I was done. Searching, fearless, and thorough. Put everything down on paper. Some guys will say, you can't do it that fast. Well, color me wrong, but... Calling me recovered. Worked. You know? That's all I can tell you. Spent the next 2 days reading my sponsor, my fifth step. Only problem now is we're done. And he's done. He's back at Logan. Now 3 days up in New Hampshire, we're done. He's over. He's going to go back to work. He's going to go home. I'm sitting at the level going, whoa, whoa, whoa. How are you going to sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you going to do that? Don't you like have to pick me up, give me rides, lend me money, buy me cigarettes? How are you going to do that from Boston to Baltimore? I'm getting gypped. And here's what he said, you guys. He grabs the book, he pulls me close, he hugs me, he slides the book under my arm, and he whispers 2 words in my ear that I'll never forget. He said, Dave, we got to trust God. I got to go home, and you got to fly, and I got to drop you out of the nest now. You got to do this. He says, you've had it all wrong for so long, Dave. You see, you think you got to get your life in order before you go out there and help God's other kids? No. You got to get out there and start helping God's other kids now in order to get your life in order. And it starts now. You got 1 day of sobriety? Show the guy with no days how you got one. 7 days over there. You got 2 days over here? Can you show her how you got 2 days over here? There's 4 weeks and 2 weeks. Can you show her how you got 4 weeks? I'm looking. I'm not saying don't take them through the steps yet if you haven't been. Wait on that, you know. But my God, can you reach out to your brothers and sisters now? You know, it starts now. You know? And guess what happened? Well, the next 3 weeks, my sponsor finished taking me through the rest of those 7 steps over the phone. Over the phone. And guess what happened? 3 weeks into it, 3 weeks, you know what started to happen? I started to get that spiritual awakening. That's the result. That spirit that was so dead when I got here, so dead, my spirit stood dead in that courtroom, standing there shackled to the ankles, waist and wrist of 16 strangers. That spirit that was so dead that day slowly starts to come alive and awake. Not by what I see, say, read, or study, but rather what I started to do. I started taking action. I started reaching my hand out. I started looking for people I could help. And I just started doing it blind and faith and trust and everything that's come with it. You know, my sponsor made it real clear. He says, David, every day is a day. Every day is a day we have to carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Every day. I don't stay clean on yesterday's shower, I don't stay fat on yesterday's meal, I'm not staying physically fit on yesterday's workout in the gym, and I'm not staying spiritually fit on yesterday's action. If you want it today, you got to do it today. It's just that simple. Whether you do a little or a lot, you got to do something every day. This is not a program for lazy people. You know, but here's the kicker, guys. When I do something every day, be it a lot or a little, when I do a little something every day, guess what happens? I get to stay spiritually fit. And when I'm spiritually fit, there's nothing for a drink to fix. Boom. And I ain't looking for one. And that's how this works. We got to just keep taking action. The most amazing thing, the most outrageous miracle that I can report to you guys in my life, my obsession to drink and drug. Bar none, the most powerfully destructive force in my life. My obsession to drink, oh my God, it's gone. It's been removed. It does not exist tonight. I'm not here tonight fighting the fight. I'm not here tonight hanging in. I'm not here tonight monkey on my back. I am not shooting for midnight. I've been set free. How, when, where? What day to wake up? When between July 21st, 2002 and here we are today, December 11th, 2014, what day to wake up and find the obsession was lifted? It was gone. I don't know. Can't tell you when. Why? Because I had nothing to do with it. The 10-step promises is that. One day when I wasn't looking, God took it. You want to get to know God? Get to know His kids. Hang with His kids, run with His kids, reach out. Help His other kids. You're going to see God, hear God, and feel God in places you never saw, felt, and heard Him before. And the miracles, my God, they happen everywhere. 3 weeks into it, I'm watching the clock. I'm bringing this in for a landing. I'm not going to go keep you guys over your time. But I'm on the 12th step. 3 weeks into it, I'm on the 12th step with my sponsor. He's in Baltimore. I'm in Boston. He's got to give me a little direction. He goes, what are you doing tonight, Dave? I go, Steve, I'm going to go out. I'm going to a meeting downtown. I'm going down to Newbury Street tonight. He goes, you want a little direction? I go, shoot, hit me. What do you want me to do? He goes, here's what I want you to do tonight, Dave. You ready here? Hear me out. Tonight, Dave, when you walk into that meeting, here's what I want. Instead of you walking in that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, I want you to walk in that meeting tonight. I want you to walk in. I want you to walk in there looking to see what you can bring. I want you to find that new guy in the corner who's all by himself and let him know he never, ever, ever has to feel that way again. Find that girl there in the corner shaking away, second row, third seat in, and let her know she never has to be alone again. Because I want you to start talking about your recovery. I want you to start talking about the action you've been taking. I want you to start talking about the 12 steps you've been talking about. I don't know what I want you to do tonight, Dave. I want you to walk in that meeting. I don't want you walking out till you find a man to sponsor. I go, Steve, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. I'm 3 weeks into this thing. You've been down in Baltimore 8 years with Tom Flynn running next to you, man. I'm all by myself up here for 3 weeks. How do you possibly think I'm ready for that? I said, I'm not ready for that. I can't do this, Steve. I don't know, like, you know what? I'm not qualified. He says, David, I know you're not qualified, and you know you're not qualified, but that new guy in the corner's got no clue you're not qualified. Now get over there and help him. The guy's right. He's got no clue. I got no clue. I got no clue. You know what I got? I got my hand out. That's all the guy sees, and that's all he has to see. Because the fact of the matter is, I am no more qualified than anyone in this room right here, right now. The guy's getting their 24-hour chips, or the guy getting his 7-year chips, or my 13 years. I am no more qualified than anyone in this room right here, right now to carry this message. Why? Because God does not look for qualified men and women to carry this message. He looks for the willing. Are you willing? Are you willing? Or you're like my sponsor says, well, what's the matter, Dave? Are you a faithful trustee of the gift, or do you got the busies? You got the busies again? What's just so damn busy, Dave? You're chasing the money, the property, and the prestige. You had those before. They fell the hole. He says, besides, Dave, I saw when you got out of detox. You didn't look too busy to me that day. Come on, let's go. You know what I mean? He's right, you know? All day long, nothing to do, straight out of detox. You know? Yeah, he's right, you know? So what's my message, you guys? We get a solution. We got one. That works. The victory over alcoholism, June 10th, 1935. It already happened. The victory's here. It's ours to have. It's ours for the taking. One alcoholic reached out to another alcoholic at a kitchen table in Akron, Ohio on June 10th, 1935, and it's been around ever since. And the only decision you need to make tonight, if you haven't made it already, is whether you want to take part in a miracle, a wholesale miracle in your life that's already happening for millions of dollars. Are you living in a dark place drinking tonight? Welcome. How about this? Are you living in a dark place sober tonight? Welcome, man. I know it. I've been there. We can walk you out of the darkness and into the sunlight. And the miracles can happen for you. Now look, we don't get a lock on them. We don't get a monopoly on miracles here. But we get our fair share. Talk to the guys, the men and women in this room who recovered from this thing, and they'll tell you about miracles. Can I tell you a little two of mine, three of mine before I sit down? November 15, 2001, I'm arrested by the federal government. I'm arraigned by a guy named Chief Justice Mark Wolf, the Federal District Court in Boston. 2.5 years later, on October 22, 2003, I appear before Judge Wolf for sentencing. That's the day I went in there. And I'll tell you something. The United States Attorney, the Assistant Attorney for the United States handling my case, the federal sentencing guidelines said I could get anywhere from 0 to 30 months in jail, anywhere from 0 to 2.5 years. And Patrick Hamilton, the U.S. attorney that morning, walked into that courtroom ready to ask Judge Wolf that I be sentenced to 30 months, 2.5 years, for my part in that conspiracy. I pled guilty that day to the charges because I was guilty of the charges, to be honest with you. But anyway, I went in there, and I did plead guilty. And we're going to argue for probation. And Mr. Hamilton was arguing for 30 months, 2.5 years. And when the arguments were said and done that day, Judge Wolf looks up. He looks at Mr. Hamilton. You know what he said? He said, Mr. Hamilton, not today. Not this time, Mr. Hamilton. Judging by this stack of letters and those 40 people standing in the courtroom behind Mr. Perry, it would appear to me that he's had some sort of an impact here in the recovery community in Boston. And I think we should probably leave him on the street doing what he's doing. And he sentenced me to 5 years probation. 4 months later, the Massachusetts Bar Association took my license. And rightly so. I disgraced my profession. I had no right to keep that. You know? Remember I told you walls one by one by one by one come down? If I came before you guys a month ago, I would tell you that I still have one last wall still standing from the wreckage of that past. You know, I'm still trying to get my license back. 2 weeks ago, the Massachusetts Bar Association, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, voted for my reinstatement. Yeah, baby. Anyone knows the miracle about the greatest miracle? I was telling Terry today. That same judge, Mark Wolf, Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Federal District Court in downtown Boston, when he heard about my reinstatement, he sent me an email offering to personally swear me in. Isn't that crazy? That's happening a week from today. And he's doing it in private, and he asked me to bring my parents with me. Remember I told you 50 years today, they were married, and 50 years today we celebrated their wedding anniversary. That night I was sitting on that cell, staring at the payphone. Next week we're celebrating their 63rd. And I've been beside them every step of the way, honoring and loving and just showing up in their lives. Because that's all they've ever wanted me to do. You know? We get things back, you guys. We get things back, but we got to do it together. This thing only works when we do it together. Don't do it alone. You know, and if you're new and you're walking through here, coming back or starting out, whatever the case may be, grab up one of us. We do this thing together, like I said. Now look, I promise you I wasn't going to go way over, and I'm trying not to. But I wrote a little something to close for you guys on your anniversary, and I'd like to share it with you before I sit down, if you just give me 2 more minutes. So how can I now bring this talk to a close? This tumultuous tale of my highs and my lows, this heartfelt rendition of a life that once was destroyed by the things that a man like me does. Lost and alone, broken, bloody, and beat. Near death, but unwilling to admit my defeat, with my bottle near empty and unsure what to do. God picked me up, and he brought me to you. And what did you do when the day arrived? Fresh from a nightmare I barely survived. You dusted me off without making a fuss and said, "Welcome home, Dave. Just stay here with us." And so started this journey from darkness to light. From that pitch black horizon, your hope gave me sight. Once placed in your arms and touched by your hearts came that moment of grace when recovery starts. And so it's my turn. I must now do the same. And though your face unfamiliar, though I know not your name, I know where you come from as I gaze in your eyes. We felt the same heartache. We told the same lies. So come take our hands as we reach out to you. For as children of God, it's what we must do. It's what we must do, for in here we've been taught to keep what we're given. We give away what we've got. So what have we got that we've come here to give? We've come here to share the new lives that we live. There are miracles happening right here and right now, and the reason we come here is to just show you how the hopeless find hope, how the blind get to see, how slaves to the drink are finally set free, how couples once split and how families once torn get brought back together, how lives are reborn. If hope's what you're seeking, lay claim to your seat. But don't sit there for long. Let's start moving our feet. But let's move them together. You can't do this alone. This miracle's not one you're going to find on your own. And to the sick and the suffering in this room here tonight, there's hope and salvation to your left and your right. And I stand now before you, quite remarkably sure that there's no group of people whom I respect more. There's a power we found that's both higher and real. Having once been without it, we know how you feel. New freedom awaits you. Please don't settle for less. It's yours should you seek it. Good night, and God bless.